him I can't bring myself to tell him to shut up. Sure is an asshole. Sure is dead. Sure, I'm just imagining that he's talking. None of that stops the bastard from being absolutely right. I don't have a chance in hell of outrunning this cop. Not in this heap.
Pull over!
The only question left is whether I'm gonna kill him or not. Tough call. For all I know, he's an honest cop, regular guy. Working stiff with a mortgage, a wife, and a pile of kids. My hand moves all on its own, sliding one of my guns to my lap and thumbing back the hammer. I don't know what to do.
You better stop. You're making him mad.
Whatever you say.
Damien, and that is an empty chair where Douglas used to sit.
I think he's asleep right now.
Pretty sure he is.
I wonder what he's dreaming about. You think he dreams...
Processors. I dream about processors.
You think he dreams in French?
I'm pretty sure he does. I'm pretty sure he does. He doesn't own anything from Arcos, though. They're French. They make technology.
Are they French?
Both of his loves. He should have all Arcos technology, but he doesn't.
So, with Douglas... out of the game today, it seems like worthless to play the questions today. Yeah. So, sorry for all you guys who have been enjoying
and
that.
People are turning off segment. The podcast right now.
They're like, no more sarcasm.
I can hear the clicks. Wait, do digital players make clicks? What the hell am I talking about? A click?
Wasn't that a iRevo product?
I have no idea what the hell. What kind of click? Is this Walkman days? Do we put this out to tape? Click the Walkman stuff. We should not. That is a terrible idea.
If their retro people get into it.
No, let's not do that. You have no beer. You only drink when Douglas is here?
Well, I didn't put any in the freezer, so I forgot.
I see NyQuil. We can drink NyQuil.
I can drink NyQuil. I can start singing some scissor songs or something.
Oh my God, so racist. Oh, Jesus. Oh my, have you been speaking with Tanai lately? What the hell just happened?
So, we usually talk about movies on this podcast.
Yeah, we usually. Oh, that's good.
So, this good. Week, I've been watching not that many movies, but some good ones that I really want to talk about. But before I get to the good ones, I have to mention the not so good one. The one that's not so good that it's kind of bad. And I don't know if I really want to call it bad or just bland. And the movie is called Green Lantern. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
No.
I swore I saw you in the theater yesterday, but I found out later it wasn't you. I saw this guy, he looked like he had headphones on. And then later he got up and I said, no, that's all for David.
That's not David.
The movie is really, really, really bland.
So I keep hearing.
And what makes it even worse is that this might be the worst movie I've ever seen converted to 3D. Like, we have complained about converted 3D movies. Right, we have complained about them. Mm-hmm. And I have made my voice heard on the topic. But honestly, it literally looked like I was looking at a flat image for the whole movie. Right?
Like, I saw the reviews come out, I'm like, I like Ryan Reynolds, but not enough to waste $1,000.
No, you see, what happened to me was it had been 2 weeks since I'd been to the theater because that came out, and then Transformers came out this week, which I refused to go to. And then I looked in the papers on Sunday, and I'm like, Zookeeper and Monte Carlo coming out. You know what? I'm going to the theater today. I'm going to watch a movie. I'm going to watch Green Lantern. It looks like the least...
Offensive of all of these
movies that are coming up. So I just wanted to go to the movies again for the first time in a while, and I decided to watch Green Lantern, and it was a bad decision.
You're like, Karen needs my money.
I don't want to talk about a movie. Moving on.
Read that review on the internet. anyone.
I also watched a film that I don't know if Damon has ever seen. It's called Le Mans. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's a French name of a Formula One race. It's a film from 1971 starring Steve McQueen.
Yeah, I know. I know the movie now.
I don't know whether this actual race was based on something true or not. You know,
Le Mans, yeah.
No, I know that the race exists, but the one that they gave us in that movie, if it's based on a...
I don't know.
Or
I see cars driving. I light up.
The movie is fantastic. I spoke about this when I talked about Senna a while back. I don't know anything about cars or Formula One racing or any of these things. I just saw a Steve McQueen movie and went, you know what? I'll watch that.
You should really stop admitting that, you know. Like Westerns, you should really learn about cars. A man, goddammit. But it's taking up all that space where no car knowledge exists. What do you put there?
This movie is a movie that I don't expect a lot of people to like because it doesn't have...
There's cars.
It does, yes, there are cars, but it literally is like as if I was watching a broadcasting of the race itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many people out there would want to sit through a movie like that which don't have like a cohesive regular story.
All of them are of male influence. Should like it. Have you seen Vanishing Point?
Actually, I haven't.
You need to watch that too.
I haven't even seen the original 60 Seconds movie.
Watch Vanishing
Point. Watch Alright, I'll put Vanishing Point on my watch list.
It's just cars. Smile.
If you loved Senna, you love this movie, and it's a perfect movie to watch right before you watch Senna. Put it as a double feature, Senna and Le Mans, and you're perfect.
You'll be out about 7 hours, but...
No, it's not that long.
Senna is 3.5 hours. This movie is about 2 hours. I know it's long. Fact checking.
106 minutes on IMDb.
For Senna. 106?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the one.
Let me check Wikipedia to see if there are multiple cuts.
That's not the one I saw.
Because I watched Senna and it was like under 2 hours.
What?
Okay, they have an extended version, which is the 3-hour one we're talking about.
Okay.
They have the international version, which is 106 minutes, and they have the Japanese version, which is 108 minutes. I need to find that 3-hour version.
Okay, I lost days at a time watching that movie.
And Le Mans is under 2 hours as well. So I just couldn't believe you telling me about you're going to like lose all of your life.
It's like 6 hours to burn if you watch those movies. Never mind.
It's still a good double feature. Yeah. Like honestly, think about watching those two movies back to back.
Just stop watching terrible movies. I know you think you have something better to watch, you're wrong. Just watch good movies.
Also this week I watched the documentary Conan O'Brien Can't Stop.
I have that. I kind of wanted to watch it, but I didn't. I don't know why.
I think it's a fine documentary, but overall as a film it's just okay. Like if you've seen any musical tour documentaries, it's just like that. And it's just Conan O'Brien going crazy otherwise. And there are those moments where you see Conan O'Brien's humor entering the world. Like, not just as a show, but as, like, him commenting on things happening around him or how ridiculous stuff are. I even like the moments when they're filming the promos for his tour. Where, like, you would see him on... He even showed you a shot of this during the trailer. You see him on the ground with a big belly and a beard. And he hears a phone ring and just grabs it and says, television, job! and that stuff is really funny. There's even this moment where you would see a lot of the guest stars from the shows come back and talk with him. And there's this guy, the guy from 30 Rock, the guy who plays the page, as the page in 30 Rock, who's basically the hick.
Right.
Like, you would like the jokes he was running at that point because I couldn't tell whether he was being naturally funny or ridiculously mean.
Sounds good.
But overall, it's just an okay documentary in my mind. I guess one other movie that I haven't mentioned, and I don't think I have seen, and I don't have it on my list, but I probably want to mention, is the Comedians of Comedy Tour. which is a documentary, a tour documentary from 2005, distributed by Netflix, which has Patton Oswalt.
I don't have Netflix.
Zach Galifianakis,
mm-hmm.
Brian Posehn.
Brian Posehn.
Posehn and Maria Bamford.
Yes. All people I like. Posehn is a lunatic that loves heavy metal. He doesn't look like a person that should love heavy metal, but he does. And his jokes are...
I love Patton Oswalt's stand-up.
I'm pretty sure everybody at this point.
Like, I want him to stop being in TV and movies and just be a stand-up. I know he can't afford it.
Yeah.
But
yeah. At some point, he's going to need to buy shit. But I hear that his stand-up tours are really cheap. Like, he does them extremely cheap.
Well, this one in particular...
Essentially making no money.
Yeah, they made it very clear that how he decided to set it up was as opposed to regular comedy tours where they have to go to comedy clubs or big stadiums and they have to pay huge fees
right.
And customers have to come in and pay drink minimums and stuff. He made sure to book all of these small auditoriums and... small clubs where people don't usually have these kinds of things, so people can come in and pay like dirt cheap and
yeah.
Come and see them. And most of the comedy was really fantastic. I mean, the only person I think honestly that I haven't seen do stand up before was Galifianakis.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen like.
Did he wheel out the piano? Was the piano there?
He had the piano there.
Okay.
Yeah. There was even this one bit where he was doing his set on the
mm-hmm.
piano and he found a key that didn't work,
mm-hmm.
and he just kept pressing it. He's like, "I'm going to keep doing this until someone comes up here and fixes this and stuff." And the thing about he has like the weirdest stand-up
yes.
act ever, because like if you thought him in movies was like this odd personality, imagine
mm-hmm.
him just standing up in front of you being a character mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. It's pretty. I liked the how detached he is from both the crowd and reality. It's this weird mix of him just he transports you to his own crazy world, and you just have to go along with him. If what I just said sounds like something you'd like, then you'd love him. I mean,
I really feel like I need to find a full set, a full like hour special or something with him if there is one, and see if I can get through that, because I don't know if I like watching what he did
right.
in the bits like intercut in this documentary. I don't know if I could get through an hour of him, but whatever. And I think that's all I really watched this
mm-hmm.
week.
Okay.
Oh, one tip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to tell you from now, I don't know if you've come to this conclusion on your own,
mm-hmm.
just stop watching True Blood. You're not going to like it. Because I just watched the second episode of season 4, and while I enjoy it for how ridiculous it's
uh-huh.
gotten, I know you're going to have problems.
Right. Now, I'm glad you brought that up. Both my sisters still watch True Blood. And my sister was watching episode 2 this afternoon. And
this season, that's just
right
off
the fourth
yeah.
season. And I saw, you know, previously on True Blood, like that clip, and in that little reel, I went, guys, seriously, this is. And so I'm like, what happened to. Because I don't even remember the name. I remember Suki. What happened to the vampire dude that was with Suki?
Bill.
Right, Bill is his name. Right, she's like, oh, Bill, well, you need to. It turns out that he became king of the vampires after killing the previous king. And it turns out that from the very beginning, it was a plan and he knows this and that. Like, stop. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like this other show. I was on ABC for a couple of years. Lost? That's what it sounds like. Not that they're going the same route, but the fact that they're making shit. No one has a plan for this show. What they're doing is they're making shit up as they go along, right? So that is why we've gone to crazier and crazier shit. When I started watching the show, it was, hey guys, what if vampires existed in real life? And there was people with signs and pickets. And it was just fun to see how human beings would react to the fact that they were vampires. And that was the first season. And I loved the first season. That was great. But then someone told them that if we keep introducing shit and making it more crazy, it would be more entertaining. And it is for most people. I have to come off.
You're off the wagon.
Like, I was just looking at the previously, I'm like, what the fuck is that? There's people jumping through hell and there's angel. What is... never mind. Never mind, I'm not watching this. But fair enough, I found something to fill the True Blood spot. In fact, there's a lot of stuff, but... specifically, I started watching The Trip. Six episodes. Yes. And I saw the first two episodes. And it is that trailer, essentially extended for half an hour at a time. Coogan and... I keep forgetting his name.
Rob Brydon.
They're terrific together. And they're reviewing restaurants across the English countryside. And the food has literally nothing to do with series.
It's Top Gear of food.
Right. No. But they're not talking about the food. The food has... They spend about... For the two episodes, I think they spent about 2 minutes out of the 60 minutes talking specifically about food. What they're doing is essentially what the league does. They're just being assholes to each other. And it's funny. I do love it. I don't think I'm going to watch the movie. I'm just going to watch the six episodes and be content. Film Spotting spoke about this last week or this week or whatever the hell. Just look up the Film Spotting episode where they talk about it. They're much better at explaining why they like shit than I am. I am able to say I like things.
You're not able to articulate.
No, I am, but I don't want to be that person. So, hey.
You have to find the middle ground.
Right. It's really good. And if you listen to this podcast and put any weight into anything that I say, find The Trip and start watching The Trip. I also started watching another British show called Sirens. It is a dramedy, as most British shows are these days. There's elements of drama, but there's a lot of dark comedy interspersed. The only recognizable face is recognizable if you've watched Game of Thrones. The King of the North is in the series. I don't know his name.
The King of the North.
Right, he became King of the North towards the end of
Okay, alright.
The son of...
Yeah, the son of Sean Bean.
Of Sean Bean, right. He's in there and he's gay as shit. And it's really funny. I like the dynamic. There's three medics and there's this policewoman. And the first episode, they deal with some traumatic situation and are forced to speak with a shrink. And they are going through the stages of dealing with trauma, which is... it is happy, horny, and then down. That is how they describe the three phases. And the rest of the episode is just them dealing with the fact that they don't want to admit to the therapist that they have to go through this process. They're better than that and they all fail miserably. And it's really funny. But at the same time, as much as I hate to say this and Douglas hates hearing this, it has heart. And I feel dirty saying that.
Do you feel Native American?
I feel like Captain Planet. That's basically where I'm getting to.
Captain Planet.
Now, if there's anyone listening to this podcast and not watching Louis, please turn off the podcast now.
I'm not watching Louis.
You don't count because you're an idiot. It's the best thing to happen to TV since The Wire. Because he has free reign to do literally anything he wants. And he's using that to the best of his abilities. I thought the first season was amazing. And he's taking it further in the second season. I don't want to give away anything. Because anything I say will kind of diminish just how amazing the first two episodes have been. But guys, I know you think, all right, look, watch Vanishing Point, watch Le Mans and Senna, and then straight to Louis, you know, nothing else. And then come back next week, I will talk. Guys, you need to be watching Louis. Louis is amazing. I saw the extended version of Sucker Punch. There's 18 more minutes. It makes a little more sense.
No, you're not allowed to say that.
Not a lot.
Do they show you the titillation and the...
No, they don't show her dancing at any point. They do. You would love this. There is actually a dance number. Moulin Rouge style, when they first enter the second Dream World or whatever it is, with everybody singing and dancing, that was left out of the theatrical cut for no reason. That actually helps the movie make some kind of sense. And
I would probably watch that scene.
Right, you should watch that scene. And then towards the end, John Hamm seduces what's her face, baby doll.
Yeah, I remember reading about that in an interview.
Right.
That he had that scene and he cut it.
Right, and somebody cut it. This is now the second movie that he's made where I don't understand why they cut the movie. Watchmen, when I saw the director's cut, I just went, why would you even put out the theatrical release if there's a far superior version?
It's of obvious the movie? Because I don't care about time. The studio asked them to.
Yeah, but that
does this from time to time where they tell people you have to reach a time limit.
But if it makes the movie worse, then it's not going to help your movie. You have to. Yeah, and if there are things that make sense to be cut, then fine. But if it makes less sense the more you cut things, does not help.
When Zack Snyder, for a moment I was about to say Galifianakis.
No, that would be terrible.
Zack Snyder's name becomes synonymous with Terrence Malick,
right,
he can cut the movie however long people like.
Post Superman. Because when that movie comes out, I'm betting no.
Or Chris Nolan.
I am betting no that Superman movie is going to be a thing. It is going to be. Michael Bay is going to look at that movie and quit doing movies after Superman comes up. Because that movie won't make any sense. But there's going to be so much goddamn action in that movie. I know two things. One, they're not retelling the Superman story. That is what I'm 100% positive of. And two, within 15 minutes, Superman would have at least had two fights. I'm betting. Because he doesn't know how to tell any stories. He's bad at it. So he's going to stick with this whole Superman beating shit. I also sat down.
That doesn't sound good.
Begrudgingly. I don't know why. I don't have a real explanation for this. Despite everybody saying, you shouldn't watch this movie. For some reason, I said, alright, let me just give it a shot. I started watching Hall Pass, made it 20 or so minutes, and then removed it from XBMC.
Literally, what you should do is you should YouTube this. YouTube the credits. And you'll see this funny scene at the end of the movie with Stephen Merchant, because at the end of the movie, everyone's learned their lesson, you know. And the woman, Stephen Merchant's wife, says to him, you know, maybe I should give you a hall pass. And then he imagines what would happen to him when he goes on his hall pass. And I thought that scene was funny. The rest of the movie you can delete.
Like, within 20 minutes I went, I haven't laughed once. And this is really bad. This is really, really bad. And so I stopped watching. But then I followed that up with something even worse. I thought I liked Russell Peters. I'd liked some of his stand-up in the past. He's Indian Tanai. That is how I like to refer to him. And he had some special where he was in England. And what happened is, in the first 10 minutes, I chuckled a couple of times. And I don't know if this was for the best. I was watching this with Joel. And so we started watching it. And we laughed a couple of times in the first 10 minutes. And then about 5 or so minutes pass, and we looked at each other and we're like, I don't, was there a switch? There's nothing he's saying, it's funny. So we gave him 5 more minutes, and it still wasn't funny. I'm like, wait, is it that I have outgrown these racist jokes? And Joel started to laugh, reminding me that no, I have not outgrown these jokes. He's just telling bad jokes, and it was kind of sad. It's the first time I've watched a stand-up special, and it made me doubt whether or not I actually liked a comedian. But he was bad, like really bad, and I don't know if it's if he was telling. Isn't like I didn't hear any other jokes before, so it couldn't be that.
It wasn't fresh.
It was just
bad.
It was just bad, and
your allowed to not like it, you know.
It was just this. No, but I remember. That is with comedians, you expect them to always stay at a certain level, and even if they fall a little below it, there should be some baseline level of funny that you enjoy. But when he essentially transforms from someone funny to Dane Cook, that's not good. I did, however, make myself feel better by listening. Listen, I didn't watch this because I don't have endless money and I cannot fly to New York to watch Matt Parker and the guys that do South Park. They have a Broadway musical called Book of Mormon.
I've been hearing about it. Right.
And having only listened to the audio, I can only imagine how good that is the first Broadway show that I actually would pay to go to. And if they put it out on DVD, I'd watch it. There's a song in there that is so amazing that I was literally in stitches. And so if anyone gets the chance, it's won like a billion Tony Awards or something like that. If anyone gets the chance to watch this or even listen to it, you should. I don't think it's that expensive. It's like $10 on Amazon or something like that. But it is amazing and everybody should watch it or listen to it. Because while South Park might not be going in the right direction, clearly they're focusing their energies somewhere else, and it is still amazing.
So trailers this week. So this week in trailers, we have the first trailer come out for Brad Bird's iteration of Mission Impossible.
An hour ago, a bomb blew up the Kremlin. The president has initiated Ghost Protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed. Now I've been ordered to take you to Washington, where they will hang the Kremlin bombing on you and your team, unless you were to escape after assaulting Brandt and me. But if anyone of your team is caught, they will be branded terrorists out to incite global nuclear war.
So what happens now?
Brad Bird, wasn't he from Pixar?
Yes, Incredibles, The Iron Giant, and Ratatouille.
Right.
And he's come to live action.
Alright, so I'm going to give this Mission Impossible a chance. No, I'm joking. Despite me not liking the third one, I have seen all the Mission Impossibles. It's a damn action movie. I have to watch them. It's written in my contract here that Andrew pays me to watch movies.
I pay you.
Apparently so.
Is that why my bank account is so low, though?
Pretty much.
I'm going to have to...
That and I'm siphoning money from your account.
I guess.
Probably shouldn't have told you that.
Probably.
It looks like a Mission Impossible movie.
It does.
Your mission, if you choose to accept it, we've gone past... this is number 4. You don't get to do that anymore. just like how in James Bond, there are certain shitty lines that they've taken out. It's time, guys. We're adults. Anyone that recognizes that line, think about what you're doing. You're taking a line from a series that started 10 years ago, 15 maybe, and you're going to say to me, you're going to put back that line to bring nostalgia. But anyone who knows that line, even if they were just born, let's just assume that they're adults. We don't need it. Treat people like adults.
That's what we strive for here on the podcast. All right. You're all adults.
Simon Pegg is in this. And the dude from Hurt Locker. Sorry. And the dude from Hurt Locker is also in it. What's his name again?
Jer Moreno.
He's also Nightwatch or Quick Shot.
Nighthawk.
Or Arrow Man.
Right. You're just making fun of him though.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I do love Jer Moreno.
That chick is.
Thanks for that non-second talk. That's who that chick is.
The girl in the group. Her name is Paula Patton, and I know you probably haven't seen it yet, but she was in Precious.
Okay.
And I think she looks really pretty. You saw Precious?
Yes.
Okay. I just think she's kind of pretty, and I'm like, oh, it's nice to see her in like a big budget movie.
Yo, dog, they blew up so much shit in this trailer, it's amazing. So, I'm on board.
To an Eminem song.
That I was not a fan of.
Can I tell you what I find so odd about this trailer? Like, if you watch general action movie trailers, you'll always have the story set up, and then they'll have the high action music with really quick cuts, giving you moments of action where you're like, oh, lots of shit blow. Mm-hmm. But in this trailer, it gives you the setup, then gives you that high action moment, then has this moment where they pause in the middle for no reason other than to look to have that shot of Jeremy Renner and Tom Cruise just facing at each other, because we all know, all of us who've been paying attention to how the franchise is going, that they're hoping that it'll still make lots of money and they'll eventually just stop using Tom Cruise and have Jeremy Renner. They're hoping to do that, have Jeremy Renner follow the franchise. And then they then start again with the high action music.
Like, wait, what? Oh, we're not blowing up enough shit? All right, let's go, guys.
I just find that really odd watching the trailer, but at the same time... I still really like it, and I still like Mission Impossible. I rewatched the first one this week, and to tell you the truth, the only thing that I found annoying was I noticed for the
first time...
No
John Woo. No dubs.
No dubs. The first time I noticed this was when the opening credits happens in that movie, you see there is a montage of clips from the film you're about to watch as if it's a TV show. So I know it's purposeful, but at the same time, I'm like... This isn't a TV show. I want it to be a movie. And I don't want you to tease me with stuff.
You wouldn't have known that until you got to the end of the movie and are watching the movie again. So you cannot blame them for that.
Of course you would know that. You see Tom Cruise.
How do you know that that is in the movie? You could have just thought that was previous missions. You wouldn't know that until you got to those sections in the movie.
They didn't have enough money to film previous missions.
Fine.
Brian De Palma get money? No.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still think MI1 is the best of the lot.
Shadow Law. Is Shadow Law to blame on this? I just want people to keep using Shadow Law. Such a terrible name.
The other trailer we saw this week was a teaser came out for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is actually a remake of a 70s film starring Gary Oldman, John Hurt, Sirian Hines,
Tom Hardy
and Colin Firth, as well as a bunch of other British actors who are all fantastic. And if you didn't notice already, it's directed by Thomas Alfredson, the guy who did Let the Right One In, and it's his first movie since then.
There's a mole right at the top of the circus. Been there for years.
I need you to do something.
You'll have to assume they're watching.
Things aren't always what they seem.
Moscow planted the mole. It is one of five men.
He killed our man in Istanbul.
time.
It's become so ugly.
We're not so very different, you and I. We both spend our lives looking for the weaknesses in one another.
Is it sad that I like the name? I'm more excited for this movie, and that had nothing blowing up, than I am for Mission Impossible. Is that bad of me? Am I losing credibility as the action guy?
I think you are.
I don't think I am. I think Let the Right One In was so awesome I've been looking for this trailer for a while. The only sad thing is I'll never remember this name because it's it.
I like the name.
Doesn't
tell you anything about the movie.
No, but it's too long and I cannot remember it.
It's such a really nice, sweet name. It's like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. I mean, you definitely know what to say it in a conversation. I saw Tinker Tailor Soldier
Spy. I remember Transformers War for Cybertron, which makes no sense. But I cannot remember four words that have nothing to do with each other.
They all start with T.
Thanks.
Other than Spy, of course.
Ah, yes. I was going to ask you about that, but never mind. They literally went, who are some great British actors? Oh, these guys are putting them in a movie. But who will direct it? There's this dude that made this awesome vampire movie. Twilight? No, not Twilight. Not Twilight.
I think the man who says Twilight gets shot in that room immediately.
We're getting the Twilight dude to do what? I'm not paying for that. But it looks... we should probably tell people what this movie is about. It's a
spy movie. There's a mole in the agency.
But it is not James Bond Mission Impossible spy movie.
It's more
the reality of what people who are spies probably
do. What's that Matt Damon spy movie from a while back that De Niro directed?
The Good Men?
The Good Shepherd.
Good Shepherd, right.
It's more like that than any James Bond film.
And it looks intriguing as all hell. I wish that whoever Fincher paid to cut the Dragon Tattoo trailer, or if he did it, Fincher should just direct trailers for everybody. That trailer is awesome.
The Dragon Tattoo trailer? Yes, it is.
It's still awesome. I keep watching it. I know I'm going to watch the movie anyway.
Have you seen the Swedish film?
Yes.
Oh.
I finally broke down on site. I'm now watching the second too. I didn't talk about it because everyone has spoken about that movie. It's good. Okay. I still want
the feature version. There are things about these shorter trailers that we see come out, especially the ones from the directors like David Fincher and I was about to say Chris Nolan, but I guess not, Scorsese, where they can just put together.
That first Inception trailer was amazing though.
When
it was just the scene where they were in 0G and there was just that sound effect over and over and no one knew what the was going on. And you just saw people floating across. Inception. Like, okay, I'm on board.
Okay, I'll give Nolan then. Yeah, definitely Nolan. These shorter trailers where basically they will have all of these really well put together shots put one after another. And sometimes they'll have dialogue over it, sometimes they have it for this one. But honestly, I don't think we need it because we are just those kinds of people who watch films because they look beautiful. And this movie looks beautiful. Mm. It definitely has a darker tone to it than, let's say...
But we also watch movies because of the names attached. We didn't need a trailer because we're crazy people
who
follow film. they're doing it for the normal people. The idiots, I call them.
Nice. Audience, if you heard that, please just hit the name.
Anybody who is listening to this podcast clearly doesn't fall within the purview of idiots. Although there might be that. Not in the movie watching sense, but in your wasted your time listening to this sense.
That's totally wonderful.
I listen to the podcast, those are stories or some shit.
This looks beautiful. I can't wait to see another Alfredson movie. I think I might just rewatch.
I think there's going to be a crazy ending
this weekend.
I think vampires might be in this one.
there'll be a scene under a pool, yes, and things will just fly all over the place.
Oh,
and
so good.
That scene is just so fantastic, and they got it so right in the remake.
Film by Stanley Kubrick, starring Ryan O'Neill and Marissa Berenson, has won the Best Picture and Best Director Award presented by the National Board of Review. Richard Schickel, in a Time magazine 7-page cover story, called the film ravishing, overwhelming, an uncompromised artistic vision, and said, "Director Stanley Kubrick asserts a claim to greatness that time alone can, and probably will, confirm." CBS TV critic Pat Collins.
So this week we all decided to sit down and watch Barry Lyndon, the 1975 film by Stanley Kubrick.
Sir Stanley Kubrick.
Sir, is he a sir?
I have no idea.
You're just calling it. It's just your respect, yes, at this point.
Sir Stanley.
I'll go for that. Sir Stanley Kubrick. It's been well documented my issues with Kubrick films.
Mm-hmm.
He tends to go for the overly long and overly dramatic moments, and this film is not this film is never short of those moments put together. What I wonder though is, did he somehow try to take all of the madness from his usual films and subdue it into this period piece drama set in classic England and goes throughout Europe? It even takes us through the European wars. Does he manage to subdue that? I can't wing this at all. I need to write this down.
Yeah. Alright, so I guess the question you're asking is if he was able to tone down his madness. And the answer is yes, but in all the wrong ways. Barry Lyndon is a story that Kubrick takes his...
I'm going to take a Douglas moment and say, it's a story, really?
Yes,
it's
yes,
a story.
Yes, it's a story. which takes us through the life of one Lord Barry Lyndon. He goes from being an Irish peasant.
He's actually never a lord.
I know. I said that on purpose. Thanks. So, thank you, though. Thanks. For ruining the end of this movie that no one will ever watch. He goes from being an Irish peasant, he falls in love with his cousin, shoots some dude, and he's off on his grand adventure. Except the adventure isn't very grand, and he reaches the highest of highs, except he doesn't, and then falls back into the depths of being a nobody. The movie is very long. The sad part about that is, as much as I respect Kubrick, this movie also feels very long. To the point where halfway through the movie, there is a slide, there's a black screen that comes up and it says intermission.
I didn't know they still did that in the 70s.
At that point of the movie, I thought really seriously about not completing this movie, because I was fearful of where the second half of the movie was going to take me, and I feel my fear was justified. This movie is rated really highly on IMDb. It's ranked really highly all over the internet. People have awesome things to say about it, and I do not. The positives about this movie is the positives to every Kubrick film we've ever seen. The man is a genius. His shot selection, his direction, all of that is true. And even the writing, as boring as it was sometimes, it was really well written. The problem with this movie is that it drags. It takes you forever to get to anywhere. And the overall story that is told is not, in my opinion, a story that is worth telling. It tells a story of a man who grew up poor, aimed high, and because of the things that he did to get to his high status, it also became his downfall. So it is not truly a unique story. It's not a story you've never heard before. But the devil is in the details, and the details are boring. He fights a war. This is the most boring war I've ever seen in any movie. Never has a war been depicted in such bland a manner. People are dying all around him, and you're still bored. There are big explosions, you're still bored. And at some point, I was hoping that I'd get into the rhythm of the show. Like, it would, for some reason, I'd get caught up in the way that the story was being told and the things that were being said. But at every turn, there's something that prevented me from enjoying this film more, and this is the story that is being told. It is not. I don't want to say it's not good.
You can say that.
But I don't think. What is happening here is that because so many critics love it, I don't want to shit all over this movie. Because this is one of the movies where, like Double Life of Veronique, it is a movie that I don't understand what people see in this movie. But there's clearly something that they're seeing, because it's not like there's good and bad reviews for this movie. They're all good reviews. But I don't see where they're coming from. I can't. Is it that I lack the requisite film knowledge?
I think it's that while you were watching the film, you didn't, instead of not watch the movie, just stare at the DVD cover.
Okay. I didn't drool all over the Kubrick's name was attached. The movie is boring. It is not particularly well told. It is long. There's at least an hour that can be cut out of this movie, because it's 3 hours, and in 3 hours it takes. So, I mean, there's things that happen in this movie that do not bear. It is of no consequence to the rest of the movie, and I just felt like there's too much time being wasted, and I don't understand. I honestly, I'm stumped by what it is that people see in this film. I was hoping that one of you two would have been able to pass along that information. But as Douglas is not here, and it is clear to me that Andrew is also on my side, him haven't said anything to this point, I'm going to still... And the problem is that, like Double Life of Veronique, like, there's this feeling inside of me that I need to rewatch the movie. Maybe there's something more to be gleaned out of this movie. But I learned with Double Life that that is a lie.
That's a bad decision. Exactly. Bad life choice.
If I sit down and rewatch this movie, I'll just end up hating this movie more than I do at present, and I don't think I'm willing to bet 3 more hours that I'd like this movie. I don't think so.
So this movie opens up with a big caption on the front, part one.
Yeah.
The story of how he got the style and title of Barry Lyndon.
Right.
So basically the first half is him going from this little shitty
Redmond Barry
in
Barrington.
In Barrington in Ireland to then being Barry Lyndon.
No, actually it doesn't. It goes from him doing that to him meeting Lady Lyndon,
which is pretty much there.
All right.
And then the second half starts, and it goes how Barry Lyndon screwed up his life.
All right.
There are definitely some really good notes to this movie, and I think it comes with a lot of the Kubrick-ness. I don't know how else to say it.
No, you're right. That's why it's so funny.
He, the way he puts the movie together is really well done. The way how he can frame a scene. Like, I read somewhere apparently that the film was entirely shot in natural light, which I think is amazing based on, especially when you look at the darker scenes.
He's very good. He is very good at shooting these films.
I've always thought, I'm a big fan of war movies, and he just spoke about the war scenes when he's fighting for the English and so on. I've always thought it really stupid of that era of war, the tactics people employed during those wars, in which you lined up all of your men,
single
file, walked in a straight direction, and allowed them to shoot at you until eventually there'd be one.
But you are gentlemen. We don't hide and shoot at people. We meet people head on and we fight in the stupidest way possible.
I remember
it's like 300 with bullets.
One thing I was kind of expecting but didn't happen at all was towards the end of the film, and I really don't want to say much.
If
but
you can, no one who wants to see this movie hasn't seen this movie except me.
Except you and me at this point.
Pretty much the only person. I'm like, a Kubrick film that everybody loves that no one talks about. I have to see this.
It's on my 1001 list, apparently. I mean, I'm like, I don't want to watch this movie again. the scene in which he has a duel with his stepson.
Right.
Right? You imagine they would have brought back to what happened in the first duel while he was a youngster challenging the guy. Mm-hmm. Not the outcome so much as what was proposed at the beginning of the duel.
Right.
But it didn't go down that road, and I was kind of surprised by that. And
I require satisfaction. That's the gayest thing any man can say to another man.
Damien, I require satisfaction.
I suggest you take that to New Kingston.
Will I get a room? Will you give me
every time I heard that, there was a chuckle.
A lot of it's very well acted, and a lot of the scenes, the dialogue is really well put together. The writing is great. Like, I even remember that moment right before intermission, the scene where he's come to talk to Lord Lyndon. He is Lord Lyndon,
yes.
Right? The fact that he's brought back Lady Lyndon, and you know, he's just saying, and the guy's just going off, and it's just a great moment in the film. But my problem is that when the movie's over, and you try to think back as to what you have added to your life watching this
movie.
What happened
in this movie, Hugo?
You don't really look back on your 3.5 hours funny.
Am I supposed to like anybody in this movie? No? Am I supposed to learn anything from this movie? No?
I mean...
Why did I sit here and do this?
Part of me feels I would have enjoyed the movie more if it was just part one alone. Because the way that Barry grows from point A to point B is really interesting, because it starts off as a series of lucky circumstances, and then sometimes it becomes unlucky. And it reminds me of this story from the movie Charlie Wilson's War.
Right.
I don't know if you remember the scene where at the end of the movie, I mean, he's been trying to say it for the whole movie, Philip Seymour Hoffman has a moment with Tom Hanks, and he's telling him the story of the Zen master.
Listen, not for nothing, but do you know the story about the Zen master and the little boy?
Oh, is this some from Nitsa, the Greek witch of Aqualipa, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is. There's a little boy. On his 14th birthday, he gets a horse. And everybody in the village says, how wonderful, the boy got a horse. And the Zen master says, we'll see. 2 years later, the boy falls off the horse, breaks his leg. And everybody in the village says, how terrible. And the Zen master says, we'll see. Then a war breaks out, and all the young men have to go off and fight, except the boy can't because his leg's all messed up. And everybody in the village says, how wonderful.
And the Zen Master says, we'll see.
And then it just becomes a story like that, where the fortunate things becomes unfortunate, and the unfortunate eventually becomes fortunate. Because when these things happen to you, they are something that can be either fortunate or unfortunate. But once it's happened, you then deal with the situation, and you can still create good or bad fortune out of whatever is happening to you. And that's kind of what I took from part one alone. When part two came around, I was just like not ready for more of him this. Just going insane.
More of this.
I guess that's my main problem with the film, that as I said, when it's over, I'm just like,
oh, don't be an asshole. Thank you, Kubrick. It took 3 hours. You could have put that on the first slide and we'd be done.
3.5 hours of my life gone.
Hey guys, maybe we shouldn't be jerks.
Damon, you're going to know how bad it is when I say this. I would have preferred to have watched that spoof again.
That ain't right. No, it is a better film. For everybody except Andrew. This is a lunatic. Despite being hurt by 2001,
I'm glad I'm not the only one who...
That movie's lunacy. I hold him in such a high regard that when I saw the score, his overall score, I think it was 8.1 on IMDb, I went, it is ridiculous that I have not yet seen this movie, because I do respect all of Kubrick's work, and I have loved him and most of his movies, in fact all but one of his movies, and so I just assume that, well, Kubrick did it, so I guess I have to fall in line, and I'd love this like the others. It's kind of long, but I'm willing to put up with that as long as the movie is good. But this is one of his misses, and what I cannot understand is where all the love is coming from.
I
understand that it is coming from people who study at the feet of Stanley and think that everything that falls out of his camera is God's gift to filmography, but they're wrong. And I wouldn't recommend this movie to anyone at any point for any reason. There's better movies like this that you can watch.
You're a period piece person.
Right. There's better movies like this that you can watch. And there's better, far, far better Kubrick films.
Like, you see, the weird thing is that you've heard me complain about Kubrick in general over the years.
Because you're a lunatic.
Because I'm a lunatic. But then, as we've been doing this podcast, and I've seen some of his earlier movies, like Paths of Glory and The Killing, like, I've gotten a renewed interest in his movies. And then you made me watch something like this. Which is one of the movies that I'm trying to avoid. His overly long melodramatic movies.
Like, what the hell happened? Right, he was aiming for it to be dramatic. The thing is, the anchor of this movie is Barry. And no one likes him. You don't feel sorry for him. Because he's not, let's say, a good guy. And he's not enough of an asshole for you to outright hate him. You just look at his decisions and go, these are bad decisions and you probably shouldn't be doing this. And he just continues down the road. And by the end of the movie, he's such a jerk that anything that happened to him, the only person I feel bad for is Lady Lyndon. The son, he's a punk. She lost her mind. He's a punk. The lady lost her mind by the end of that movie, and
am I the only one who kind of started to think of the Tolstoy movie in regards to Lady Lyndon?
Yeah, kind of. I should have watched that movie.
The Last Station.
It's just, this movie is just mediocre. Kubrick knows better. I know he does, because he's made better movies. So I know people are going to,
because I had
flame us for this.
I had the same question that you just mentioned most throughout this review about where does all this love come from? So me being me, I decided to take this question to Twitter. I asked people, what do you think of Barry Lyndon? And I got a few responses. One from one Persephone101. I like period pieces, but it was long. However, I was very impressed by they only used natural light to shoot the film. It wasn't a bad movie, but you know how Kubrick films can be lengthy and melodramatic. My friend fell asleep. One person replied, all you said was my least favorite Kubrick. And someone else, Film Cave, replied with, fair, when I told him how I felt, because he never really responded directly, he said, all right, fair enough. I recommend a dumb short movie as a follow-up.
Well, I guess it won't be flamed. I guess people agree, but they just aren't willing to sully the name of Kubrick
openly.
I'm not going to go on the record saying I hate a Kubrick film. Are you crazy? Flim. I'm so tired. I need to go home. I just said flim.
You just said
on the internet.
And on that note, I guess it's definitely
time. I've been too busy mocking people all these years that it's coming back to bite me. I love hearing people say that though. Flim. How did you get that? It's LM, you know.
It's actually a word, you know?
Yeah, I know flim is a word. But that's
that's not the point.
Right.
Film. Anyways. Lim. Anyways, it's been fun, but it's time to say goodnight. You can find the podcast on gmanreviews.com as well as iTunes and the podcast alley. I'm on Twitter at gmanreviews and also Facebook.com/gmanreviews. Douglas isn't here to represent himself, so I won't advertise him.
Will he be on Google Plus?
I'm on Google Plus, no. And if you're on there, search for me. I'm Andrew Robinson. But
adding to your people, I don't want to hear from Circle.
I don't know. It hasn't given me a big reason to keep on it as yet. Because, you know, it's in that small stage where not enough people are in it that you're, you're very like...
Don't worry. Google is going to crush this. Because they're frigging Google.
They're sad after a wave. And they're like, we're not making that same mistake.
I am no part of a social network.
You're on Google Plus?
By default. I am on Google. You don't get a choice. You have a Gmail account? Google Plus.
So yeah, thanks for listening and good night.
We're out.